This is an interview for the University of Adelaide Oral History with... Sorry, John, I've got to start again. Just to begin again, this is a University of Adelaide Oral History Project interview with John Prescott on the 25th of October 2006. Interviewer Rob Lynn. This is session number one. John, you're born in 1924. Could you just tell me a little bit about your parents and families, please?
Well, my family has its roots fairly well back in Lancashire. My father, the Prescott name on my father's side, is in Walton Liddale or and or Brindle, which is near Preston, going back into the 17th century. My mother comes from, or her lineage comes from Yorkshire, up in the more or less the far northwest of Yorkshire, and her family worked its way down into Lancashire about the end of the 19th century. My grandfather, or at least my great grandfather, was one of the pioneers of the trade union movement in England, and his son carried on, that would be my father's great-uncle, as a trade union secretary, and they had the leadership of the Bolton No. 2 branch of the Amalgamated Engineering Union for nearly 70 years between them, which is a pretty good record.
70 years.
And my grandfather was a was an engineer in the cotton industry. And he travelled widely over Europe installing cotton machinery, which was built in Lancashire. And one stage he lived for, or was it 8 years in France. My father was actually born in England, but he did had all of his, almost all of his primary schooling in France, and two of my aunts were born there. On my father's side, there's a pretty long history in the cotton, pretty long record in the cotton industry, rather less so on my mother's side. I think by and large they were husbandmen and so on, although my grandfather, whom I never met, was an overlooker, that's a foreman in the cotton industry in Haslingden, which is in Lancashire, and he had to take early retirement because he got emphysema from the cotton fluff, which was a rather a common thing in those days. My mother worked in the cotton mill. She left school at the end of primary school, and because the family was not very well off, and they wanted to make sure that the boys received a fairly adequate education. And so she finished school at primary school, and in fact her mother had, that's my grandmother again, whom I didn't ever see, she had almost no education and taught herself to read. But interesting, it's a sort of interesting byways in that part of the family.
Now, your mother's Christian name was Elsie.
Yes.
And her maiden name was Mason.
That's correct.
Now, what was your father's Christian name?
It's James.
James.
James Arthur. And there's and that's interesting because he wasn't meant to be christened James Arthur. He was meant to be christened James Harter after his mother's surname. But the clergyman didn't hear it correctly. And, of course, in Lancashire, they dropped their H's, so if someone was called Harter, he would have been called Arthur, and the minister didn't sound quite right, so he christened my father James Arthur. Yes.
John, you said to me on our earlier get-together that your mother's reason for working as a weaver in a mill was really very much to help her brothers go through higher education.
I probably didn't say higher education.
No, sorry, you said education.
Education, yes, that's correct. Yes, that's correct. My mother's younger brother, a acquired his education by going to Teachers College. My mother's eldest brother was just about the age of, how old would he have been, in his early 20s, I think at the time of the First World War. And I don't know what his trade was before that. After the First World War, lots and lots of people from Lancashire enlisted. My Uncle Ernest and Uncle Eric both enlisted. Uncle Bernard went into a clerk in an insurance firm and stayed with them throughout his life.
His entire life, did he?
Same firm.
Now, your father, James, he's born in Bolton.
Yes.
Then first part of his education in France, is that right?
Most of his primary education was in France, at Lille.
What happened from that point with him for his education?
Well, then when they went back to England when my father was about 11 or thereabouts, just about the end of primary education, and had to relearn English. Well, not entirely, but he did, I think, probably one additional year of primary education in Lancashire, and this would be in Accrington, and from there he went to Accrington Grammar School and then on a scholarship to Manchester University.
Now, at Manchester, he went on to do a postdoctoral fellowship in agriculture, is that correct?
Yeah, he was one of the first, I think there may have been two, but he was certainly the first person to have a British government a scholarship in agriculture. I think it was probably called a scholarship, it may have been called a fellowship. And the conditions of that were that you should spend a year on the continent, somewhere in Europe, and a year at Rothamsted, and also I think sometime at Holmes Chapel, which is not far from Cheshire, which was an agricultural establishment, a research establishment. Mm-hmm. He had graduated in organic chemistry, but had an interest in agriculture because of helping on his future father-in-law's allotments in Accrington with Eric, my mother's brother. And he'd also stayed with relatives over on the other side of Lancashire on the farm. And he tells the story of how he did some elementary tests of soil of soil properties on that farm. I'm not quite sure why, but so he had an interest in agriculture, and he was given one of these scholarships. he went to Leipzig. This is at the beginning of 1914, and he very very nearly got caught by the war, the First World War.
So was that for agricultural research?
Yes,
Leipzig?
Yes, he went to work with Ostwald. Who would, I think, who would arguably the best, the most distinguished physical chemist of his era, and certainly very high in the hierarchy of physical chemists of any period, the sort of work that Ostwald was doing was frontier studies of the way in which particularly ions behaved in liquids and solids and all the rest of it, but he was warned that people could see the war clouds rolling up, and and Ostwald said to him, I think probably you should bear in mind that you're going to have to get out in a hurry, and if the Russians mobilise, I suggest that you leave. Mm-hmm. And that was good advice. He had almost no money. He borrowed some money from an American student who was there, which he eventually paid back, incidentally,
oh.
and caught the last train out of Germany into Holland, and arrived back in Accrington, as he said, with tuppence in his pocket and very hungry.
That's a very good saying. Now, how did your father James and mother Elsie meet?
Well, they actually met independently, in a sense. They both went to a Band of Hope meeting.
Oh,
I think probably in Haslingden, which is not far from Accrington. And mother was living in Haslingden probably at the time. They'd have been 10 or maybe in their early teens, both of them. And my father certainly remembers it. I don't remember my mother saying much about it, but the Band of Hope meeting, of course, the Band of Hope was a temperance organisation designed to ensure that young people didn't succumb to the evils of drink. And my father used to say that it was a little bit bizarre that he met mother at a Band of Hope meeting and in later years became chairman of the Wine Research Council or whatever the name of it was at the time. The Masons moved to Accrington from Haslingden, and they were back-to-back neighbours.
Mm.
So the opportunity for meeting each other was now really quite strong, and my father was very friendly with Eric, and they used to spend a lot of their time together.
Oh, that's your mother's brother?
That's my mother's younger brother, yes.
So your parents are married in 1916, after your father's managed to get out of Germany and do a few things at Rothamsted, I suppose.
Yes. I think they married in 1915.
Right.
Yes, it would be 1915 because they went to Egypt in 1916.
Oh, I was going to ask about that. Yeah. How did that come about?
Well, I suppose it wasn't a British mandate in those days, although there was a lot of both French and British influence in Egypt at the time. But the Egyptian government, or the sultanic or khedival government, it had been a branch of the Ottoman Empire, but the British more or less took it over. They were looking for somebody to, they were looking for an agricultural chemist to ensure the quality of the fertilizers that they were buying and to carry out an agricultural research project. And they sought advice from Sir John Russell, who was the director of the Rothamsted Experimental Station, and he suggested that my father would be a very suitable person, and he was appointed without more ado.
Yeah.
And so they left England in 1916 during the war, left from Trieste and dodged submarines across the Mediterranean to arrive in Alexandria. I no longer remember the exact month. I don't think it matters very much. But I think towards the end of 1916.
Do you have any memory of how they enjoyed it there? Did they
My father didn't ever say very much about... Well, he did, but not in quite in those terms. My mother said they were the happiest years of her life. And they lived... on the experimental farm at Bachtiem, which is in the Delta. It's about, I think, probably 30 kilometres from Cairo. The nearest post office was at Matariya, and Matariya was the town where the Holy Family were said to have spent their time when they were in Egypt. They lived there from 1916 to 1919, just after the war, when they had the anti-British riots in Cairo, and then the society insisted that they go back and live in Cairo for security. They gave my father a they gave him a motor bicycle so that he would be able to get away if necessary, and they gave him a revolver from which he removed the bullets and put the revolver in the drawer, and never used it. And I find it difficult to imagine him doing it. And he and one or other, my mother and my father, were subsequently told that they had a meeting in the village to decide what should be done with them. Yeah. And they decided that they were okay. But they had to move into Cairo, and that's where I was born.
And in 1924?
I was born in 24. My sister, I had a sister, she was born in 22, but she died in Egypt, and she died before I was born.
Now, what ever induced your mother and father to come to Adelaide?
Well, now, this is Sir John Russell again, because Peter Waite had indicated, told the university he was prepared to make over his entire estate to the university for agricultural research. And that included the property at Erbray, the what is now the Arboretum, and the education, what was came to be called the education block, which is to the west of Fullerton Road. He told the government that he would leave one of those to the education department for agricultural education, and that's where Erbray High School is now, and the TAFE Institute. And the other one, plus some other property, and a substantial endowment to the university to carry out a rather broad spectrum of research in agriculture. Didn't include animals. There wasn't enough money for that. And the University of Adelaide, that was announced some years, in fact, before Peter Waite actually died. So it's often stated to be a bequest, but in fact it was a gift, conditional only on his wife being able to occupy the property until she died. And in fact, both of them died quite relatively close together. And in 1923, probably, the property then became formally the university, and the endowment became the university's. And so the chairman of the education committee, I think Sir William Goodman, it wasn't the vice chancellor. The chairman of the finance committee, and one other, went to England to ask Sir John Russell's advice. They wanted to set up an agricultural research establishment and to suggest people who might be useful. And it was advertised in Australia, and A.E.B. Richardson, who was then at the University of Melbourne, was a very highly favoured candidate. And Russell gave my father a very, very strong recommendation. And my father and my mother were anxious to leave Egypt because of having lost my sister, and they were interviewed. My father was interviewed at Port Said by these two people from the University of Adelaide on the way back. He wasn't offered a job on the spot. When they got back to Australia, the matter was discussed by the University Council. And they had originally decided simply to make one appointment, one professorial appointment. And then they gave it a good deal of thought, and they decided that perhaps they had enough money to make two appointments. And that's what happened. And Richardson was appointed the director of the Waite Institute. My father was the Waite Professor of Agricultural Chemistry. And he was, in fact, the first member of the Institute of Staff, Waite Institute staff, to take office. Richardson and he were appointed about the same time. Richardson had to wind up his affairs in Victoria. So he was a little behind father in terms of administration, but not much. I think the first non-academic appointment was Ken Pike, the farm minister, manager.
Now, how did your father and Richardson get on together?
I think they got on fairly well. My father was extremely discreet on what he said. I never heard, when I was young, I never really heard him discuss these matters. I certainly remember him talking about things that Richardson did. Richardson went to the Ottawa Conference to represent Australia. That was food and agricultural conference. And that, I was old enough to remember that, so that must have been about 1929 or 1930, 31 maybe, perhaps 31. And the commentaries that you say that it was a good combination because Richardson had a good deal of farming experience in Australia. He was an Australian agriculturalist. He's rather more on the practical side, and my father was a brilliant chemist. In fact, he's described on the plaque in North Terrace as the founder of soil science in Australia. And it's not entirely clear to me, it should be, I suppose, that he made any decision as to what sort of work he would do when he got here. Obviously, things like crops and so on were important, but by and large, that was more closely related to the things that Richardson was interested in. Mm. And so research programs on crop yields and pastures and so on were, broadly speaking, under the aegis of Richardson. And my father then was a chemist, and I think he decided quite early that soil science needed a good big boost in Australia.
Yeah.
I do recall his being going over to see the soldier settlements in the Riverina, which were getting all badly gummed up by salt. All of this, 100 years ago? Mm-hmm. Not quite 100, 75 years ago. I think within a couple of years of his coming to Adelaide, he really definitely established the fact that he wanted to develop soil science in Australia. He was a disciple of the Russian school of soil science. I'd have to look it up now to remember the name of the Russian soil scientist that he was particularly impressed by. And one of the things that he sought to do was to try and relate the soil, the rocks from which the soil was derived, and the sort of vegetation that it carried. And nowadays, even now I can, when I drive out into the country, I can see the boundary between one sort of soil province and another because the vegetation changes. Mm. Of course, the farmers know this, but most city dwellers wouldn't even think of looking for it.
So, John, did your parents arrive in Adelaide in 1924 or 5?
24. August, end of August 1924.
Yes.
And they stayed in a hotel on the corner of Rundle Street and Pulteney Street. I don't remember that, but it then became Cox Foy's.
Foy and Gibson.
Foy and Gibson's.
Yeah.
Foy and Gibson's. That was a hotel at that time.
And then the Electricity Trust building later.
Was it?
Yeah.
I couldn't have told you that.
Yeah. That's on the site of where the current Meccano car park is it not?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the southeast
corner. Southeast corner, yes. Yeah.
So then, was it after that they moved with the Munro sisters?
I don't think they lived there very long. They went and boarded in Malvern with the Munro sisters, and then I suppose, after a long enough period of time to look around and decide what sort of a place house they wanted to buy, they bought a house on Cross Road, the corner of Hexham Avenue, which looked across the Waite Institute. And for the whole of his professional career, my father lived within, not only within walking distance, but within sight of the Waite Institute. Yeah. And even after retirement, if he'd been a good cricketer, he could have lobbed a cricket ball from his retirement house into Waite Institute property.
So, John, you were educated locally.
Yes, I went to Scotch College.
Yeah, in your first years. But do you have a memory of work on the site of Waite Institute that your father had been appointed to?
Oh, yes. I can remember the going with him to the first chemical laboratory, which was in the stables. In the coach house. This has been recreated for the University Historical Precinct, the Waite Historic Precinct, and the laboratory looks more or less, I believe, as it was in the days when my father worked there. I do remember some of the staff then. There was a fellow by the name of Shapter, Samuel. Richardson, I certainly remember. I remember Mrs. Richardson. You could hardly forget her. She was quite a flamboyant personality. Yvonne Richardson, her daughter, I didn't see very much of. She was a half a generation older than I. Richardson had an office in Herbray House in what is now the library. I have very vague recollections of going there. But I have recollections that go back not much older than 3 years old, maybe.
Mm.
I can certainly remember the Darling and Melrose buildings being built. I remember it being a bald patch of paddock, but I do remember it being no higher than the foundations. And that would have been about 1929, I think.
What was the country like up around Waite Institute at the time? Was it largely paddocks behind the Waite, or was there housing there at that point?
Well, there was Alverstoke, a property. I think somebody was probably living in it at the time. The university eventually bought that. And then there's Claremont House, much further up the hill, where people still live. I think it's owned by the university, but it has tenants in it. There were people living in the lodge. In fact, cousins, the gardener, the Herbray House gardener, who was retained by the university, Holden. Was Peter Waite's chauffeur, and I do remember seeing Holden. I mean, that was I discovered later that it wasn't spelled Holden; it was spelled Haldon, but the way people pronounced it. I don't think he lived on the premises, but cousins